WMFO Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Pre-recorded.
Thank you, Digital Henry. Good morning. It's the 17th of March, 2021. My name is Arthur, and this is the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Tufts Freeform Radio here in Medford. Today is St. Patrick's Day. However, I'm not going to play any St. Patrick's Day themed programs, as the one I did find was pretty poor quality. So we'll celebrate cancel culture with episode 36 of the Mel Blanc Show, titled Supermarket Journal Editor. It's had an original air date of the 13th of May, 1947. Thanks.
From Hollywood, Colgate Tooth Powder presents the Mel Blanc Show.
Use Colgate Tooth Powder, keep smiling just right. Use it each morning and use it each night. It cleans your teeth, makes breath so sweet. Use Colgate Tooth Powder.
Want teeth that sparkle and dazzle, a breath that's fresh and sweet? Then try Colgate Tooth Powder, for the new all-purpose Colgate Tooth Powder cleans your teeth and sweetens your breath. Yes, this new all-purpose tooth powder produces an amazingly rich active foam that's marvelously effective. Every time you brush your teeth with this new all-purpose Colgate tooth powder, your whole mouth feels clean, sweet, fresh. Your teeth regain their natural sparkle. It's been proved in 7 cases out of 10 that Colgate tooth powder instantly stops unpleasing breath that originates in the mouth. And as for cleaning, you can depend on Colgate tooth powder revealing the natural brilliance of your teeth. Yes, Colgate tooth powder, the new all-purpose tooth powder, does everything you can expect or ask of a dentifrice. Try Colgate tooth powder today for teeth that sparkle and a breath that's sweet.
Use Colgate tooth powder.
Yes, Colgate tooth powder presents the Mel Blanc Show, written by Mac Benoff with Mary Jane Croft, Joe Kearns, Hans Conried, Fran Heflin, Earl Ross, Victor Miller and his orchestra, and starring the creator of the voice of Bugs Bunny.
What's up, Doc?
Playing his new character, Zookie.
Hello, everybody. Hi.
And starring himself in person, Mel Blanc.
Hi, folks. Ugga, ugga, boo, ugga, boo, boo, ugga.
Well, here it is, the middle of May. And if May is here, can June be far behind? In Mel Blanc's little town, all the engaged couples are making plans for their dream house. And as they stop and gaze into the window of Miller's furniture store, Barbara Bevan says to her boyfriend, Jerry,
"Oh, Jerry, what a lovely bedroom set."
"You like it, Barbara? I promise you, as soon as we're married, we'll move it right into our house."
And Mary Jones says to her boyfriend, Tommy,
"Oh, Tommy, what a lovely bedroom set."
"You like it, Mary? I promise you, as soon as we're married, we'll move it right into our house."
And as Mel Blanc and his girlfriend, Betty Colby, gaze rapturously at the furniture, Betty says,
"Oh, Mel, what a lovely bedroom set."
"You like it, Betty? I promise you, as soon as we're married, we'll move right into the window."
Silly. Oh, Mel, I can just see our dream house now. Especially one little room all done in blue and pink, with Mother Goose pictures on the wall.
"Well, that's all right for me, Betty, but where will you sleep?"
"I'm talking about children. How many children would you like to have?"
10. But, I think we'll have to settle for 9.
"Why?"
"Well, President Truman wants us to cut everything 10%. Betty, how come you're suddenly talking about a home and children?
Well, Mel, don't you realize that next month's June? Doesn't that mean anything to you?
June? Gosh, Betty, I'm glad you reminded me. I've got to start saving money for firecrackers for the 4th of July.
Oh. No. I'll give you a hint. What happens all over the world in June?
Well, I don't know about any place else, but in California, it rains.
People get married in June.
Oh, but Betty, how can we get married? Your father hates me. Every night he sits in the parlor and watches us.
Oh, I know, Mel.
I don't mind his watching so much, but he charges me 50 cents an hour for being a sitter. Betty, it's high time we got married. I'm sick and tired of getting kicked around. Let's go down to the supermarket. I'm going to talk your father into letting us get married.
Hello, Father.
Oh, hello, Betty. What brings you down to the supermarket?
Hello, Mr. Colby. Mr. Colby...
Mel Blanc, you idiot. I've been wanting to see you. What did you do to my sausage-making machine?
Well, I fixed it, Mr. Colby. I was fixing a sewing machine, and I may have got the parts mixed up.
A sewing machine? So that's it.
Something wrong?
Plenty. All the Frankfurters are coming out with belts in the back.
Oh, what are you complaining about, Mr. Colby? Now you can advertise Frankfurters by Hart, Schaffner, and Swift.
Oh.
But, Mr. Colby, the reason I'm here is because I want to marry your daughter.
You want to marry my daughter? Mel Blanc, my daughter couldn't possibly live with an idiot.
I know, Mr. Colby. That's why I want to marry her and take her out of your house.
Mel Blanc, I'll break him. I just can't get mad at anyone today. The editor of the Supermarket Journal is coming here tonight to interview me. And if he's impressed with me, he'll do the story of my life in the Supermarket Journal. That is, if he doesn't find out that I have no education.
Well, Mr. Colby, that's nothing to be ashamed of. I've had very little education myself. I left school when I was 17.
Well, that's not so bad.
But I didn't start until I was 16. Besides, Mr. Colby, you shouldn't feel ashamed just because you're not educated. You have plenty of other reasons to feel that way.
What?
Oh, I always say the wrong thing. Betty, it's no use. Your father will never let us get married.
Now, just a second. Just a second. I'd be a little self-conscious lying about my education, but if you'd,
You mean if I sort of exaggerated about your education to this editor, you'll let me marry Betty?
Well, I'd think about it more favorably.
Mr. Colby, it's a deal.
But, Mel, can you make him believe I'm a college man?
Oh, it's a cinch. Mr. Colby, how many years were you at Yale?
Yale? I never even went near the place.
You see, a Harvard man already. Oh. See how easy it is?
Well, I don't know. I'm giving you a chance, Mel, but if you ball things up like you always do, your name will be Mud.
Mud, huh?
Mm.
Well, don't worry, Mr. Colby. I'll get my assistant, Zuki, to go to the library and get some books on education. Come on, Betty. Just think. By this time next month, you and I will be Mr. and Mrs. Mud.
Hello, Miss Appleby and Miss Appleberry.
Shh. Zuki, you're in a library. Hello.
Well, Miss Appleby, Miss Appleby, Miss Appleby, Miss Fruit Salad. You sure look pretty. In that dress you're wearing,
Oh, it's just a little something I threw on.
Well, it sure landed in all the right places.
Zuki, how come I haven't seen you in the library for so long?
Well, I've been working hard. I've been studying. I owe you 2 cents.
Well, what are you doing here now?
Well, Mel Blanc sent me over to get some books.
Shh. What kind of books? Travel?
N-N-O.
History?
N-N-N-N-N-N-N-O.
Romance?
Sure, what time do you get off?
Shh. Zuki, are you sure you know what you want?
Yeah, but I still gotta get a book. You see, I'm here for Mel because if he can help Mr. Colby, he's going to marry Babi...
Be quiet.
No, Betty. Say, is this a library or are you making Raleigh cigarettes?
Well, here are some books that may help you. A book on psychology, philosophy, and literature.
Gee, books on... Looks like Cy and Phil are lit.
Well,
Well, while Zookie is taking the books to Mel, let's listen to Victor Miller and his orchestra and April Showers. First time in months, Mel isn't in trouble. In fact, it looks like Mr. Colby is going to consent to Mel's marriage to Betty if Mel provides the proper educational background for Mr. Colby in his interview with the editor of the Supermarket Journal. Mel is in his fix-it shop dressing for his appearance at Mr. Colby's house when who should walk in but the first hint of trouble in the person of the town Beau Brummel, Hartley Benson.
Hello, Hartley. Warm breeze out, isn't there?
Mel, it's merely the hot breath of thousands of women panting after great big adorable me. In fact, Mel, old boy, I'm so entrancing, I take myself dancing.
Well, Hartley, you may think you're beautiful, but I have brains. In fact, Mr. Colby thinks so much of my intelligence, he's asked me to supply the educational background for his interview tonight.
Mel, I have news for you. Mr. Colby has asked me to convey to you the fact that he regards you as an ignoramus. And I'm to talk to the editor tonight instead of you.
He doesn't want me? Well, why should he pick you? I'm just as educated as you are.
Oh, yes? I'm Cornell, 38.
So what? I'm Heinz, 57. Besides, I don't believe you ever went to Cornell.
Oh, no? Well, look at the Cornell yearbook for 38, and you will see. Hartley Benson voted the man most likely to succeed at Vassar. Mel, old boy, they went wild over my student body. In fact, I was their star athlete.
What game?
Tiddlywinks. I played left tiddly. In fact, the beautiful girl was my downfall. I was about to score one for our side when she looked at me.
What did you do?
I winked when I should have tiddled. That's not all, Mel. I also played fullback on the football team. I was a terrific plunger.
That I can see, Hartley. You're built like one.
That does it. You mortify me. In fact, I'm so mortar I could fly. However, I shall soothe myself by saying...
You want to take that again?
However, I shall soothe myself by saying, I'm the prettiest thing in my life. Someday I'm going to make myself my wife. So long, Mel.
Sounds like a Model T Ford calling to its mate. My one chance to marry Betty, and now Mr. Colby turns me down because I'm an ignoramus. I wish I was dead.
Hello, Mel. Ugga-boo, ugga-boo-boo, ugga.
Greetings, great zebra.
Mel, you look down at the mouth.
Oh, I wish I was dead. I can't get married.
I wish I was dead. I got married. The other day, my wife and I had an argument, and she said, John, you'll drive me to my grave.
What'd you do?
I had the car out of the garage in 2 minutes.
Mighty potentate, if you feel that way about your wife, how come you ever got hitched?
Mel, strangled is the word. I remember years ago when I first met my wife. She was such a gay young thing, such a saucy baggage.
And now?
Now she's a baggy sausage. You know, Mel, how most girls' figures go in and out. Hers goes out and then just keeps going.
Oh, come now, mighty potentate. She doesn't look that bad.
No. Mel, you've heard of a face that will stop a clock? Well, in our house, we have a withered Benrus. In fact, yesterday, she looked at it, and Ben got up and left Russ. What a woman. Yesterday, I had 10 gallons of DDT. I was out spraying the garden when she came out and said, John, spray the bugs, kill the ants, poison the old gopher.
Dad, what a temptation.
You think you've got troubles. I was supposed to help out Mr. Colby by building up his educational background. But he thinks I'm such an ignoramus, he won't trust me to do it.
Oh, Mel, why do it as yourself? You're good at impersonations. If you pretend to be a foreign professor, you could really do a wonderful job for Mr. Colby. You've got brains.
That's a great idea. And if it works out, I'm going to get married.
Amazing how quickly a man can lose his brain.
Oh, wait a minute. Where are you going, mighty potentate?
Well, Mel, I can do one of two things. I can go to the movies and see It Happened on Fifth Avenue, or I can go home and look at What Shouldn't Happen to a Dog.
Well, have a nice time at the movies, mighty potentate.
Mel, positively not. I'm depending on Hartley Benson.
But, Mr. Colby, what if the editor of the Supermarket Journal catches Hartley in a lie? Huh? He might know about American colleges, but if I say I taught you in Europe, why, he'll never be able to check.
Yes, it would be taking a chance, but... Well, Mel, for once, you've made an intelligent suggestion. I'll call Hartley and tell him not to come. But, Mel, you'd better not let me down. I'm putting all my eggs in your basket.
Mr. Colby, all I can say is...
What in the world was that?
I just added an egg of my own.
Oh, Mr. Weed, you don't know how honored I am to have you write an article about me in the Supermarket Journal. Oh, have another drink?
Thank you. Don't mind if I do. Mr. Colby, you impressed me quite a bit. These sales figures especially are spectacular.
Well, you see, Mr. Weed, it's not every supermarket owner that can boast of an education at Eton and Oxford.
I came here because I heard you were a self-made man. Never been to college, or even... What was that you just said?
I just said that as a boy, I wouldn't have eaten if I hadn't shined Oxford.
Oh, you were a bootblack. Wonderful.
Oh, yes, indeed. I have never been to school. I mean, I ain't never went to school, and I ain't sorry no how.
Words which inspire me. So glad to meet a man who hasn't been pampered by foreign schools and private tutors.
Oh, don't bother, Mr. Weed. I'll get it.
Ah, good evening, here. Boop.
Who was that?
Oh, well, it was some man from the German band downstairs. Oh. You know, Mr. Weed, I ain't never had...
Yvonne, Mr. Colby. You thought I was somebody else, huh? No? You don't remember your old professor, Otto von Schmorgensborg?
Mr. Weed, I want you to say goodbye. Hello to Professor von Schmorgensborg.
That's a peculiar name. Smorgasbord is a mixture of strange little things.
You should see the rest of my family.
Professor, don't you have any place to go?
Oh, always joking. Little Colby was such a bright pupil. I remember how everyone almost died laughing when he came to class in his short pants.
What was so funny?
He was wearing long underwear.
But he was my favorite pupil. I remember when he went to the big city for his college examination. I wrote all the answers down on his cuffs.
Did he pass the examination?
No, but his laundry man got 100%. Corby went to colleges all over the world. Heidelberg in Germany, Edinburgh in Scotland, Columbia in China.
Now, wait a minute. Columbia's not in the Far East.
No. Haven't you ever heard of Eastern Columbia? Now, don't doubt my word, Mr. Weed. I am the greatest language professor in the world.
Let me hear you speak French.
French, okay. I say there, old boy, pip, pip.
That's English.
What am I speaking now?
That's English, too.
One of us is an imposter. I speak all languages. I speak great Turkish. Akla shish kebab avak ahalava. Great Spanish. Si no tenemos los platanos. And also...
What's that?
Great Danish.
Something highly irregular about this.
What? You happen to be speaking to a man what's an M.A., an L.L.D., and a Ph.D. And you know what that makes me?
What?
A Melderfuft.
Well, this is the most fraudulent thing I've ever heard. Mr. Colby, I was hoping to find a simple, honest, self-made man. But I see you're just a poser. A man who's ashamed of his background.
Oh, Mr. Weed.
And I'm going.
Wait a minute, Mr. Weed. It was all my fault. I was trying to build Colby up. I didn't think the interview would look good in your magazine if it said that Mr. Colby only went to Public Union Trade School.
The damage is done, and I... Did you say Public Union Trade School?
Yeah.
Why, that's my school. How come I didn't recognize you, Colby?
Well, I always stood with my face toward the wall.
Well, turn around. Mushmouth Colby.
What? There's only one man who ever called me that. Stinky, stinky
weed! Say, I went to Public Union, too.
Well, let's sing the old school song.
Yeah.
Oh, Public Union, hail to thee. Our hearts belong to old UP. Oh, alma mater, fair and true.
Till we die, we'll be PU.
Well, Mr. Colby, remember our bargain.
Yes, Father, you said if Mel helped you...
Yes, I remember, Mel, my boy, and you did help me. It was rather roundabout, but it was a help.
And you don't object to me?
Well, not too much.
You'll let me in your family?
That might be arranged.
And I can marry Betty?
Well, Mel, you'll have to propose first.
Then I'll do it right now. Mr. Colby, will you be my father-in-law?
Oh, God!
We'll be back in just a minute.
This is Mel Blanc saying thanks for listening. Good night and ear. That's all, folks.
That was Victor Miller and his orchestra playing the Mixmaster song. And this is Bud Heaston reminding you that Colgate tooth powder for a breath that's sweet and teeth that sparkle brings you the Mel Blanc Show every Tuesday at this time. Be sure to join us again next Tuesday night for more fun with Mel and the people you meet in Mel Blanc's Fix-It Shop.
Say hello to Halo Shampoo for naturally bright and beautiful hair. Remember, even finest soaps and soap shampoos hide the natural luster of your hair with dulling soap film. But Halo Shampoo contains no soap, therefore leaves no dulling soap film. Even in hardest water, Halo makes oceans of rich, fragrant lather, quickly banishes loose dandruff and dirt. Halo needs no lemon or vinegar rinse. Say hello to Halo and goodbye to dulling soap film. Get Halo Shampoo at any cosmetic counter.
Remember, Mel Blanc at the same time every Tuesday night. This is CBS, Columbia Broadcasting System.
Coping 19, brought to you by CDC and the Ad Council.
Managing today's uncertainty can be overwhelming. We crave security, and it's uncomfortable when we sense a lack of control over our lives. Develop a routine for a more balanced lifestyle with healthy habits and fun. Focus on what you can control, even if it's little things, like a before bedtime ritual.
Find more self-care and coping tips at coping-19.org.
Thank you, Ad Council, for that FCC obligation. And thank you, lads, for that drop-in. We were celebrating cancel culture. The first half of the program with episode 36 of The Mel Blanc Show, Supermarket Journal editor, with an original air date of the 13th of May, 1947. I guess some of the Warner Brothers cartoons are slated to be canceled. So Mel Blanc was the voice artist for that, as well as Barney Rubble and the Hanna-Barbera cartoons. And I'm playing some Carl Starling underneath me, sort of a tribute to those. He was the composer for most of those Warner Brothers cartoons. My name is Arthur, and this is the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. Tufts Freeform Radio here in Medford. For the second half of the program, we're going to honor Women's Month with episode 9 of Candy Matson, Symphony of Death, with an original air date of the 20th of June, 1950. She was part of the Private Eyelashes series of female detectives that aired on old-time radio. Thanks for listening.
Hello, Yukon 28209. Yes, this is Candy Matson.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Candy Matson, Yukon 28209. Ladies and gentlemen, before we commence tonight's Candy Matson story, it's a very great pleasure to welcome as our distinguished guest this evening the widely read radio columnist of the San Francisco Examiner, who conducts his own radio column under the title Day and Night with Radio and Television, Mr. Dwight Newton.
Thank you, Dudley Manlove. Recently, I conducted a popularity poll to determine our readers' favorite radio program originating in San Francisco. Heading the list, and a top-heavy favorite, was your Candy Matson program. In behalf of the Examiner readers who participated in the poll, I am happy to present this award, which reads as follows. 1950 San Francisco Examiner Favorite Program Award. This certifies that readers of the San Francisco Examiner have voted Candy Matson their favorite local radio program in a poll conducted by the undersigned writer of the column Day and Night with Radio and Television. Congratulations to all who participate on the Candy Matson program, to Monty Masters, who writes and directs it, and to you, Natalie Masters, the Candy Matson star.
Thank you, Dwight Newton. We're doubly proud of this award tonight because next week's program will mark Candy Matson's first birthday. From all of us here at NBC in San Francisco, to Dwight Newton, the San Francisco Examiner, and most of all, you, the listeners, who've made this award possible, our very sincere thanks.
We continue now with Candy Matson, Yukon 28209.
Just a moment, I'll be right there. How do you do?
You are Candy Matson, aren't you?
Yes, that's right. And who are you?
Willa Gray.
Come in, won't you, Willa? Is there something I can do for you?
I don't quite know how to explain this, but it's my brother.
Your brother?
Maybe you've heard of him, Miss Matson. Gordon Gray.
Why, sure. The songwriter?
That's right.
Who doesn't know him? He's written almost as many hit songs as Irving Berlin. What about him, Willa?
Well, like many people I know, Gordon is a crime student for relaxation. He reads all the books, listens to all the radio programs, and naturally he's heard and read a great deal about you.
Well, I'm flattered.
When I suggested talking to you, he agreed immediately.
Talking to me, Willa? What about?
Well, it's his mental condition, Miss Matson. He's suddenly become extremely childish. All day long he sits at the piano playing nothing but uncoordinated notes.
Are you sure they're uncoordinated, or is it some new style he's trying to develop?
Miss Matson, you're familiar with Gordon's work. Songs like Lazy Old June, The Tenderness of You. What he's doing now is just musical gibberish.
How well I remember Lazy Old June. I was just a kid in high school at the time. Oh. Are you living with your brother, Willa?
No, I'm not. Just as well, too. I don't think I could take it.
Why do you say that?
These foolish notes he plays. He says he's working on a thing to be called Symphony of Death. That someone is going to kill him.
What? Now you've got me interested.
I hope so, Miss Matson. He won't talk to me. Every time I drop by, Gordon just sits at the piano, laughing horribly and playing these kindergarten notes. As I said, he's a great fan of yours. Won't you go and just speak to my brother?
Sure, I'll see him. Gordon Gray with a shattered mind. What a pity if true. Think of all the jukeboxes that would have to settle for promissory notes.
Candy Matson, San Francisco's well-known gal private investigator. Merely trying to get her penthouse on Telegraph Hill cleaned, and she walks into a stack of memories. Memories created by a songwriter named Gordon Gray. Symphony of Death. It never became a popular composition, but it will always be on Candy's all-time hit parade, a tune she'll never forget, because it brought about a very strange chain of events and a fascinating finish to the entire story. Oh, and the in-between department? Well, here she is, the gal who never suffers from gaposis, Candy Matson.
When I went into the cold, hard world to make a living for myself, Gordon Gray was an American institution. That's when he wrote his never-to-be-forgotten The Rhapsody of You. I'd had no idea that Gray was in San Francisco. The last I'd heard, he was in New York, working on the score of a brand-new musical. So when his sister confronted me like that, naturally, I was caught a bit off base. She wrote Gordon's address for me, and like the rabbity little elf she seemed, ducked out as abruptly as she came. Then I dressed, drove over to an apartment house on Powell Street, just down from the family club. I pressed the button. It blew an ugly little noise back at me. I entered and went up the stairs to 221. The door opened.
Yeah?
Mr. Gray?
Yeah, that's right.
I didn't call you on the phone. I thought I'd just more or less barge in on you. I'm Candy Matson.
Candy Matson? Do come in. Oh, please, do come in.
Thank you.
So, my little sister finally got up enough gumption to call you.
Yes, she came by this afternoon. We had quite a nice little chat.
A nice chat? With my sister? Impossible. A little mouse doesn't know how to put one word after another. Oh, here. Do sit down, won't you? Place is a mess. I've got manuscripts all over the floor, the highboy, the whatnot, everywhere. Highball, spot of sherry?
Thank you, no, not right at the moment.
As you say.
I beg your pardon?
It's nothing, really. I'm just thinking of my monstrous joke. I'm going to be killed, you know.
Yes, so your sister said. Do you mind?
My sister. Young. She's young enough to marry a grandchild. Do you know what? She thinks I'm slipping my cable.
Do you mind if I call you Gordon?
I'd love it. Providing I can call you Candy.
I'd despise myself in the AM if you didn't.
Candy, you're just as delightful as I had you pictured.
Thanks, Gordon. Now, frankly, what do you think? Are you slipping your cable?
Of all the idiotic... Of course not.
Willa seems convinced you are.
Willa's a mere babe, a suckling.
What about this new thing you're working on, Gordon, this Symphony of Death?
She told you about that, too, huh? That's part of my monstrous joke, Candy.
Want to confide in me? Let me know what this joke is?
I don't mind in the least. You have brains. Not many people have brains in this world, Candy, but you do. And because you have brains, I'm going to give you a challenge.
Okay, let me have it.
Oh, no. The challenge will only come after he kills me.
He Who are you referring to, Gordon?
That's part of the challenge, Candy.
I see. Do you really believe that someone's out to kill you?
But of course. That's the delicious part of the whole thing. I'm going to be killed. It can't be avoided. That's why I'm writing my Symphony of Death.
Oh, sure. Now I see.
You're making fun of me, Candy.
No, I'm not, Gordon, really. It's just that, well, I've never met anyone who was happy about the prospect of getting knocked off.
I don't mind, actually. I've lived a full life. I've seen the world, made lots of money, been wined and dined by people in all walks of life. My music will live after me. That's all I care about.
Now I can understand.
There. You see, that's why I like you. You have brains. Shall I play my new composition for you?
If you like.
Very well. As you will discover after I'm dead, it's all part of my monstrous joke. Excuse me. Pay no attention to the technique, Candy, my dear. My fingers aren't quite as supple as they used to be. There. What do you think of it?
Gordon, I think it's a great, monstrous joke.
I knew you'd see it. It's part of the joke. You're really sharp. I knew it. That's part of the joke, and you can see it.
You pay wonderful compliments, Gordon. Thank you. But don't you think this Symphony of Death is a complete departure from your usual style? From something like, well, the Rhapsody of You, for instance?
Certainly. It's because of him. I had to write something dedicated to him, didn't I?
Well, to scramble a dangling participle, who's him?
The man who's going to kill me.
As I left, I tried to shake the picture of a cackling man playing one-fingered doodles on the keyboard, but I couldn't. The impression was indelible. When I arrived home, I was greeted by the sight of a familiar auto parked out in front. It was my number one boy, Inspector Ray Mellard of San Francisco Homicide. I invited him up to sit a spell and chew the fat.
What's new, Cupcake? I haven't seen you for several days. Seems like weeks.
Huh, a compliment. That means you're after something.
I am not. Can't I ever say something nice without you misconstruing?
Oh, okay. Compliment accepted. Good. What brings you around here this time of day, Mellard, dear? Aren't you on duty?
That's the trouble. I've been on duty for almost 48 hours straight. I had to take a little breather for myself.
Working on a deal?
Yeah, a hot one. No leads, no clues, no nothing.
For a slight consideration, I might be inclined to help you crack the case, Sherlock.
By the way, what are you working on?
Nothing but hope and what's left of the bank account.
You mean to say the great lady Private Eye is temporarily at liberty?
I mean to say just exactly that.
Well, if I'm any judge of your business ability, you've got enough money tucked away to buy the Philadelphia Athletics from Connie Mack. What do you do with all your loot, Candy?
Sew it in hair mattresses and sleep on it. Oh, excuse me a moment, Mellard.
Sure, go right ahead.
Oh, hello, Willa. I didn't expect to see you so soon.
I hope you won't think me a nuisance, but I just had to see you.
I understand. Come in.
No, thanks. You've been to see Gordon. I just spoke with him on the phone, and he told me.
Yes, that's right.
What do you think, Miss Matson?
Very sad, Willa. How long has he been like this?
Just a week or so. He flew in from New York, and I could see the change in him right away.
How long ago did he leave for New York?
He left Hollywood for New York last month.
Was he all right then?
Oh, yes. Just fine. He seemed so happy. He just finished writing the music for the new show in the East. But when he got there, the backers, as they say in show business, told him the music was no good. He said he'd return to the coast and redo it. But instead of going back to Hollywood, he came here. Took that apartment on Powell Street, and he's been holed up there ever since.
Do you think being told his music was no good had anything to do with his present condition?
Oh, I'm sure of it, Miss Matson. He's always been such a sensitive person.
No, Willa. I've known several people who snapped momentarily under a terrific strain. Maybe it's not as serious as you think.
But what am I going to do?
Well, first, he needs aid, immediately. I know a Judge Conway here in town. I think he'll help you get Gordon committed to a sanitarium where he'll get the finest medical aid available.
A sanitarium? Oh, no, Miss Matson, that would kill Gordon.
It's either that or have him get progressively worse.
I suppose you're right.
Could you, I mean, would you talk to Gordon? Explain what must be done? I don't think I'm capable.
Sure, I'll do it, Willa. You sit tight and I'll call you just as soon as I speak with Judge Conway.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I imagine I should inquire as to how much you charge for your services.
No, forget it, Willa. Getting Gordon Gray back to normal will be pay enough.
You're just wonderful, Miss Matson. Goodbye.
Poor kid. So helpless.
Poor kid is right. I couldn't help overhearing. She's about 90% mouse.
She and Gordon must have been poured right out of the same mold as far as sensitivity is concerned.
Is that the Gordon Gray, Candy? The famous songwriter?
That's the one.
And he's cracked up?
Mm-hmm.
Downright sure. Well, thanks, pal. Just the sight of you has picked me up considerably. I'll be getting back to the grind.
Mellie, dear, hold me tight for just a moment, will you?
Sure. Don't let Gordon Gray get you down, Cupcake.
Well, it wasn't a very pretty sight. And I've got to face him again. Thanks for the hug, Mellard. I'll return it someday. Mellard released his grip and left. I snapped my ribs back in place and steeled myself for the ordeal ahead of me. It wasn't going to be easy, but it had to be done. So once again, I found myself ducking down Green Street, over Powell, across California, and down the roller coaster of a hill to Gordon's apartment. He answered the door, and I was met with just as much enthusiasm as before.
Candy Matson, I was wondering where you'd been. You've been gone for ages, darling. Do come in. I've got a surprise for you. When did you get back from Europe?
When did I get back? Oh, just a day or so ago.
Your letters were wonderful. I especially adored the one from Naples. What a time you must have had.
Yes. Yes, quite a time, Gordon. How's the new symphony coming along?
That's the surprise, my dear. It's completed. Long last, it's finished. To be perfectly frank, Candy, I think it's great. I've been in touch with Toscanini. He's going to give it its premier performance at Carnegie next month. I've already sent him the revised manuscript. Can you picture it, Candy? A hushed crowd. Maestro wraps his baton. The orchestra comes to full attention. Then that magnificent, firm downbeat of Toscanini's and Symphony of Death is making its debut. First, the Allegretto. Then the Molto Andante. The audience is at first inclined to scoff, to think that Gordon Gray could write serious music. From Lazy Old June to Symphony of Death. Too much of a step, they'd say. Then Toscanini glides into the con moto. The audience tenses, not believing their ears. Little by little, they understand what Gordon Gray is trying to express. Then, as if it were not enough, Toscanini moves into the breathtaking finale. It soars, it moves. It transports everyone in Carnegie Hall into another world. And abruptly, Symphony of Death. The Symphony of Death is over. The audience arises as one. They shout for Gordon Gray, the composer. History's being made. More shouts for the composer. But Gordon Gray isn't there. Gordon Gray's dead. Because of him.
Gordon, listen to me.
Because of him. The world will have to be denied any further music from the pen of Gordon Gray.
I said, listen to me, Gordon.
Oh. Go on.
I want to talk to you. And you've got to listen very carefully. You're sick. You need help. Your sister and I are arranging to have you sent to a home nearby. They'll have you on your feet in short order.
Sent away?
Yes.
That means he will visit me sooner than I'd planned. Very well, Candy. Tell Willa to do whatever she thinks best. I won't give her any trouble.
It's for your own good, Gordon. Believe me.
I know. Candy, you never went to Europe, did you? You were here earlier this afternoon. Isn't that right?
That's right.
You just went along with the gag.
That's right, Gordon.
Yeah. He'll be here sooner. Much sooner than I expected.
Gordon Gray went into the other room and lay down on his studio couch, face down. That's when I tiptoed out of the apartment. If only I could have peeked into the future, I'd never have left, because that was the last time Gordon Gray was seen alive. I went home, fixed myself something to eat, turned the radio on low, and sat down with a book called That Frail Vessel, a book about the behavior of the human mind. Out of one corner of my ear, I heard it. It was the 10 o'clock news over NBC with Sam Hayes. And there it was. The body of Gordon Gray had been found in his apartment. The book clattered out of my hands, and I sat there for a moment stunned. But only for a moment. Another second, I was driving over to pick up an old pal of mine, Rembrandt Watson. There was a good reason for it. Rembrandt studying to play the cello. On the way over, I noticed the headlines. The police had the net out for Gordon's sister, Willa. Rembrandt was home. He was agreeable to going to Gordon Gray's apartment with me. And before you could bat an eyelash, providing your batting average was good, we were in said apartment, alone.
My word, girl. What a garish-looking place.
It didn't belong to Gordon personally, Rembrandt. He was merely renting it.
He still doesn't deny the fact that it's garish. Can't be the truth now. Why did you want me to come to this Victorian mausoleum with you?
Just a hunch, Ducky. Are you still taking cello lessons?
Taking them? Girl, don't be ridiculous. I'm now giving them.
Even better. Just as I thought. The boys in blue haven't touched anything. The manuscript for Symphony of Death is still on the piano. Can you play single notes on the piano, Rembrandt?
Well, I can try.
Good. Run your hangnails over this.
Strange. This isn't music. Except a series of notes with no meter, phrasing, or regard for the proper time to the bar.
Exactly. Play it just the way it's written.
Very well.
And call out the notes as you go along. I think I'm beginning to understand Gordon's Symphony of Death.
As you say, B, A, D, and for no reason at all, there's a rest, Candy.
B, A, D, and a rest. Go ahead.
E, G, G, and another rest.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes D, E, A, D. A long gap in the manuscript.
You know what that spells musically, Ducky? Bad egg dead.
Utter confusion.
Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I don't think so. As we say in the movies, continue on.
F, A, G, G, E, D. No timing at all.
That spells fagged.
So am I. However, it goes on like this. D, E, A, F. Another rest, then B, E, E. Fini.
What?
Through. It's kaput. Finish.
Let's see now. Bad egg dead. Fagged. Deaf. B.
Candy, love. If you're going to the notes of the musical scale, you could spell practically anything out of A, B, C, D, E, F, and G, even from a tune like Ragmuff.
But this means something. I know it does. Gordon told me it was going to be a challenge. What? Who's there?
Don't be alarmed, Miss Matson. It's only me, Willa.
Willa, how did you get in here? Don't you know the police are looking all over town for you?
Let them look. I don't care. My brother's dead. I read it in the papers.
How did you get in here, Willa? The cops are surrounding the place.
I just walked in through the front door.
Oh, wait till Mallard hears about this. Willa, you didn't kill Gordon, did you?
No, Miss Matson, I didn't. Honestly, I didn't.
I believe you, Willa. Because I think I know who did kill your brother.
You do? Tell me. Oh, please, tell me.
Down at the Hall of Justice. Okay, let's go. Oh, Rembrandt, bring along that bust of Beethoven sitting on the piano, will you?
Pleasure, dear. I'll be glad to. Candy, this thing must weigh at least 15 pounds.
Well, you're the only man in the group.
Oh? Oh. Very well. Come along, bust. Hall of Justice or likewise.
Andy, what are you doing here at a time like this? Can't you see I'm busy?
Sure, I only want to see you busier. This is Willa Gray, remember her?
Just the girl we're looking for.
Well, save your breath, Mallard. Willa's innocent. She had nothing to do with Gordon Gray's death.
Okay, you know so much. Who in tarnation did?
Put that bust of Beethoven on Mallard's desk, Rembrandt.
I was wondering how long I'd have to hold this thing.
What in the name of Schenectady do I want with that?
There sits your murderer.
Candy, are you out of your head?
No, it's so complex, it's simple, Mallard. Gordon Gray works like a beaver for 2 months writing a musical score for a new Broadway show. He takes the score to New York. The producers tell him it's no good. It's the first time it's ever happened to Gordon. It does something to his mind. He broods. He comes to San Francisco. His mental condition becomes worse.
So is yours.
Where you're concerned, yes. But let me finish. Here, take a look at this.
Bad, egg, dead. Fag. Deaf, D. Okay, I give up. What does it mean?
Bad egg dead. Gordon Gray is referring to himself. Fag, that means he had come to the end of his rope. His musical knowledge and creative ability were running dry. Gray had nothing more to live for.
Okay, Miss Edgar Allan Poe. What does deaf D mean?
Well, that had me stumped for a while, too. Then I got to looking at this bust of Beethoven standing on the piano. It seemed to dominate the entire room. Then I put two and two together and got Ludwig von Beethoven. B was an abbreviation of Beethoven. Beethoven was deaf. Deaf B.
I don't get it.
You will. Beethoven is going to hit an all-time low. The answer lies inside that plaster bust, I'm sure. Stand back, Mallard. I'm about to splatter a genius. Take a look.
Good gravy. A small fortune in greenbacks.
That's right. And a note, too, if these eyes don't deceive me. Congratulations, whoever you might be. You learned the true meaning of my symphony of death. You've also just executed my killer, von Beethoven. Now perhaps he knows how it feels to be cracked up, too. Thanks for participating in my little joke. My last charade. This is my entire estate. Put it to whatever good use you may see fit. Gordon Gray. Oh, Rembrandt, do me a favor. Take Willa outside. The poor kid's pretty badly shot.
Certainly, Dove. Come along, young lady.
I still don't get it, Candy.
That's easy to fill in the gaps now, Mallard. Gordon's music was falling apart. He knew it. So he started swiping melodies from obscure Beethoven themes. But Gordon, with only his flair for writing popular music, couldn't grasp what Beethoven had originally intended. Consequently, the things he wrote were terrible. The more he copied, the more he realized that Beethoven was becoming an all-ruling obsession. It was Beethoven in the morning, Beethoven at night, Beethoven 24 hours a day, until it drove Gordon completely out of his mind.
That I can understand, but what's this joke he mentioned?
Well, he was a great mystery fan. That's why he wrote this gibberish thing called Symphony of Death. A group of notes that spelled out bad egg dead, fagged, deaf B, and so on. All part of his warped mental condition.
Well, that makes sense. Except for one thing. How did Gordon Gray die? Exactly when he wanted to die.
Mallard, dear, I now know there are some mighty strange things in this world. Even a completely sick mind such as Gordon's has great powers of concentration. Gordon was like a captain without a ship, like a man who's been married 50 years who suddenly has no wife. You probably won't believe it, Mallard, but Gordon Gray, knowing that his mind was shot and knowing, too, that every last bar of creative music had been drained from his heart, his soul, willed himself to die. Fantastic? Not necessarily so. There are many stories about animals who have done the same thing. And if animals can do it, why can't a human being with a so-called higher plane of intelligence do it too? So that's what Gordon had done. Taken his life savings, sealed them into a plaster bust of Beethoven, along with his last laugh note, and sat himself down to die. In Gordon's mind, Beethoven had killed him. I can understand why, too. For just before we left his apartment, I found another manuscript. I had Rembrandt run over it. Note for note, It was the Moonlight Sonata, backwards. But in one respect, Gordon had outscored the old masters. He had completed his symphony of death, and Beethoven was in little pieces. That left him one up on another old master, a fellow named Franz Schubert. He'd left one entirely unfinished.
The characters in tonight's story are entirely fictitious. Any resemblance to actual people is purely coincidental. Actors heard this evening were Phyllis Skelton as Willa Gray, John Grover was her brother, Gordon Gray, Jack Thomas as Rembrandt Watson, and Henry Leff as Inspector Ray Mallard. From the star of our program, Natalie Masters, and from her husband, Monty Masters, who writes and directs Candy Matson, and from the staff of the National Broadcasting Company, we wish to express our deep thanks and sincere appreciation to the San Francisco Examiner and Dwight Newton, radio columnist of the Examiner, for tonight's presentation, naming Candy Matson as the number one program in the San Francisco metropolitan Bay Area. Listen again next week at the same time for excitement and adventure. Just dial
Candy Matson, Yukon 28209.
The program came to you from San Francisco. Dudley Manlove speaking. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
We heard Episode 9 of Candy Matson, Symphony of Death, with an original air date of the 20th of June, 1950. And this is not NBC. This is 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. My name is Arthur, and this is the Grand Hour, where I do play old radio dramas from the golden age of radio. Unfortunately, my St. Patrick's Day show wasn't exactly good quality, so I elected to go with a cancel culture theme with the Mel Blanc show and Carl Starling, who is playing under me, who was the Warner Brothers composer for several of those cartoons. And then to conclude the show, in honor of Women's Month, I played the Candy Matson. Not much else to say. We're going to cut the show early today. Thanks for listening. Don't take any wooden snakes. Thank you.